Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hello and welcome to a brand new Arsblog Arscast right here on arsblog.com. How are you? Thank you very much indeed, as always, for being here. Hope all is good with you and yours during this interlull week. Many of the players have gone around the world to play games for their countries. Some of them are friendlies, some of them are Nations Leagues. And we'll keep fingers crossed that the Arsenal players who go away have a successful, injury-free time and come back fit and healthy and ready to go. Because this time next week, we will be talking, I guess, about a North London derby and a month ahead in October, which is going to be extremely challenging. But all that can wait. Because, you know, it's next week and we don't want to be premature and get ahead of ourselves or anything like that. Nevertheless, we do have a good show for you today. In a little while, I will be talking to Matt Spiro about William Saliba and the fantastic start he has had to his Arsenal career proper. Of course, he did sign for the club in 2019, but he's only begun to play this season. It's all going very well. We'll talk to Matt about that. Also, Flo Balogun on loan in France and Nuno Tavares on loan in France. Matt will give us some insight into how things are going for them. Also, a bit later, I'll give you the winners of the David Dean book competition. I interviewed David last week, and we had some copies of the book to give away, so I'll give you the winners of that in a little while. For those of you who are asking, and many of you have and are very kind to ask about Lana, the dog who had her hip replacement operation a few weeks back, and how she's doing. Very well. We had all the stitches and staples out of her leg, no infection or anything like that. She's beginning to put some weight on it. She's definitely feeling a bit more like her old self, because the magpies in the back garden, she's barking at them, but because she has to spend 6 weeks basically in a crate to make sure she doesn't do any damage to the new hip, it is a little bit frustrating for her. And I think she is getting a little bit bored of just staying in the crate. We're trying to entertain her, trying to amuse her, but this is the difficult part now, is to convince this little dog that, well, she's not that little, but to convince her that you have to stay still when she wants to go out and do running and jumping and that kind of stuff, and she can't. But she's going well. She's going well. So far, so good. Still a way to go, but thank you all for the inquiries, and I will give her a rub on the head for all of you guys. Right, let's get on and talk about the Arsenal stuff, all the Arsenal stuff that's going on at the moment, and with me to do that is Andrew Allen. Hello, Andrew.
Hello there. Yeah, all the Arsenal stuff.
Yeah, it's a bit tumbleweedy. I do wonder if we'd be feeling a bit differently about this interlull, you know, had the postponements and everything else not taken place, because we would have had a few more games and maybe just felt like it's about time, you know, just get a bit of a rest in before we go into this crazy October, 9 games in the space of 30 days, whatever it is. But it feels like it's come at a bad time in a way, because, you know, we got back on the horse after losing at Manchester United, beat Brentford comfortably, and kind of going, oh, it'd be good if we had another game.
Yeah, I mean, in many respects, I mean, it's kind of nice to sort of sit back and just bask in the fact that we're top for a couple of weeks.
Yeah.
But this was the first season in, I don't even remember how long, where we'd kind of got rid of that pesky September interlull because of the World Cup.
Mm.
And, you know, you get the chance to build up some momentum and really get into the season. And then obviously everything that happened, and we ended up with a kind of impromptu break anyway. So, I mean, it was so important to beat Brentford, because I think if we'd come into this period ahead of 9 games, sort of 2 Premier League defeats on the bounce, that would have been incredibly frustrating. And I was a little bit nervous, because you never really know how things are going to go. When you go away from home, and especially those early kickoffs, which in the past we've had some nightmarish scenarios. But it was perfect. I don't think we've had a more kind of complete performance than that in such a long time. So When the full-time whistle went, it was kind of like, great, a couple of weeks off. We go again in October.
Yeah. Was it, I think, Granit Xhaka who talked about the fact that we showed we weren't going to lose games in bunches. I think it was a Xhaka quote. I can't quite remember. Xhaka or Gabriel, someone anyway. But that was an important thing. And it's clear anyway from whoever it was that said it. I'm displaying my huge research here, but I know I read it and I was trying to Google it there as you were talking, but I can't find it. But, you know, it does show that that thing was on the players' minds. I think it was Xhaka because he said teams are respecting us a bit more. You know, they can see there's a bit more about Arsenal this season. But they were obviously aware of that going into this game, that last season when we lost again, and maybe we lost again before we got ourselves back on track. So for the players, who are obviously feeling pretty confident as it stands anyway, just to sort of cross that little thing off the list, if you like, of things you've got to improve on this season will have been very positive as well.
Yeah, I mean, obviously last season, we all know about that horrible start we made, and you sense that from the get-go, we were basically up against it. Teams knew that, you know, there was a sort of fragility there that could potentially be got at. And this season, I guess, as annoying as it was to lose to Manchester United, and I really don't feel like we deserve to, we've managed to kind of keep the negativity at bay. Mm. And really, you know, I think even Thomas Frank said it. I mean, that Man United game could have gone either way. We have pretty much dominated and deserve to win every game we've played this season. I mean, I know that people will point to the fixture list being relatively kind, but you've said it before, everyone said it before, you can only beat who's in front of you. Mm. So far, aside from United, we've done that. Mm. I don't think we'll go to United too many times and play as well as we did and come away with nothing. So, I mean, honestly, it's been such a... I had high hopes coming into the season. There was a sort of level of positivity despite the frustration of the way last season ended. I think obviously the transfer window, the way we played in pre-season, all of that kind of helped kind of create this sense of excitement. But, you know, we've just gone about our job really diligently in every position. And I still think that there's, you know, there's obviously been stars, people who've come to the fore, but there's also, I feel like, another gear for us to go into, which is even, you know, really, really exciting, I think. You know, that we've seen little glimpses of new guys, but maybe not everything that they can deliver, certainly not with Zinchenko. We're only just getting a first taste of Vieira. And, you know, I think there's probably more to come from Marquinhos as well.
Yeah, Vieira obviously was the guy we were looking at on Sunday against Brentford. He's in the team in place of Martin Odegaard, who's been hugely important and influential in this team. And cracked in a brilliant goal, played very well overall. It was his first start in the Premier League away from home at a club that, you know, has given us problems, et cetera, et cetera. I see a lot of talk about the physicality aspect of it, and he's clearly not the biggest guy in the world. But I do wonder how much that really counts in the Premier League. Like, I think he could probably become a little bit more robust, but you don't want to, like, get him in the gym and make him into a like little tiny beefcake guy. I don't know that that would work for him. I mean, do you think that's an impediment if you've got the talent, if you've got the skill to deal with it? You know, we've seen players before who are small, but who can cope with whatever the Premier League throws at them because their technical ability is good enough. I guess we've still got to see with Vieira as to whether or not that's the case. But what we've seen so far has been very promising.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know so much about the physicality thing anymore. I mean, I think if you look across the league in almost every single team, there's sort of a smaller guy. I mean, even Brentford brought on Damsgaard the other day, who's a sort of small, astute, tactical, technical player who, you know, I think will be very good for them this season as a replacement for Eriksen, who again is a similar type. But you could even point to someone like Bruno Fernandes being physically, you know, inferior to some of the opponents they come up against. I just think when you look at Vieira on the ball and his understanding of the game, you kind of hope that he doesn't actually have to he doesn't have to get crunched, you know, in challenges too often. I mean, I know it did happen the other day on the touchline and whatnot, but, you know, he's a footballer. I think I can't remember if it was you or James who said it on the Askcast Extra on Monday. It was like, well, he's probably been the smallest guy on the pitch at every level he's played football, and he's come through pretty well so far. So,
that was James.
You know, I completely take that opinion, really. And, you know, as a football club, you don't spend 40 million euros at the drop of a hat on a guy you think might struggle just because he's a bit small. So I'm very confident. I actually thought against Brentford he was, I thought he was good, but I thought he was quite safe. Like, I feel like, you know, there was a kind of ticking over whenever the ball got to him, but he wasn't necessarily imposing himself as I think he might come to impose himself on games going forward. I think Ozil, well, maybe not Ozil, Ødegaard was the same. I mean, Ødegaard was a little bit conservative when he first came to the side, like trying to get a feel for what's going on around him, what the players like, all the rest of it. So I actually think, you know, there's definitely more to come from him. I mean, obviously, yeah, when you see a guy crack a ball in from 25 yards like he did, you know, basically give the keeper the eyes and then send him the other way. I mean, it was a terrific strike. I mean, how can your appetite not be wet by that?
Yeah, no, I agree. And I agree with you about, you know, the not quite playing it safe, but it does take a bit of time to get used to the Premier League and knowing the opposition you're going to play against, knowing the way that they're going to play. Just becoming more comfortable in your new surroundings. Even I thought it was quite interesting that the post-game interview that he did, he had Gabriel Martinelli with him, and the two of them apparently have become really good friends very quickly. But Martinelli was there not necessarily as a translator, because Fabio Vieira's English is quite good. I saw him answer questions that, you know, I've seen players arrive and they can't speak English, and sometimes they, you know, they go on TV and they try and they do their best, and fair play to them and everything else. But Vieira's English is pretty good. So he didn't necessarily need Martinelli there as a translator, but just maybe as a kind of, not bodyguard either. Media bodyguard is the wrong way, but just to give you that sense of comfort when you're doing things like that. And that might be true as to what's happening on the pitch as well.
Yeah, I mean, we've seen over the last couple of windows that no matter where we've gone and got players from, we've made a real big thing about their communication skills being good. I mean, even Tomiyasu came to England with very good English comparatively. I think the only one where we've kind of maybe rolled the dice a little bit on that is Marquinhos, and Arteta has referenced it a few times that his language skills are nowhere near where they need to be, but at the moment he's kind of getting around the place on a smile and a good attitude. But yeah, with Vieira, I mean, it seemed pretty much from the get-go, like with his Arsenal introductory interviews and stuff, that he was speaking English there. And again, you know, quite a surprise. I mean, I say that, you know, as a sort of ignorant British person who everywhere you go, you just sort of point and speak louder and feel slightly inferior to everyone who comes to this country and can do it fluently in whatever 10 languages it is. Fair play to him. And I thought what was interesting with the Martinelli situation is Martinelli obviously has been a younger member of the squad himself before, but he seems to be sort of playing the bigger brother, even though by age he is still younger than Vieira. But it's really nice to see those kind of friendships striking up. You know, that bond is building. I mean, you hear Saliba talking about it with Gabriel as well, because as Saliba's English improves, he's been talking a lot of French with Gabriel, who obviously played in France for a few years. So, I mean, I think it's really, really important. I mean, all the vibes about the team spirit are, you know, positive. Everybody, I mean, it's very rare to hear players in a team talking about team spirit in a negative way. They always seem to suggest it's always improving. It's never been as good as it is right now, that type of thing. But, I mean, right now you do look around and then you throw in the element of the, you know, the relationship with the fans, which really hasn't been better in a long, long time. And that general positivity, I mean, all of it just comes to the surface.
Yeah. Winning games as well is a big help in that regard. Like, everything is good when you're on top and when you're scoring goals and when you're winning games and you're sitting top of the table. As you say, it's easy to feel good about what's going on. As we do go into this interlull, though, there are some players who I think we look at and might have a few concerns about. So Martin Odegaard is away with Norway. We don't quite know if he's going to play or not during this break. They're friendlies. Are they friendlies or are they Nations League games for Norway?
I mean, basically the same thing, but yeah, I know what you mean.
Yeah. So you're kind of hoping that they, you know, there's common sense at play.
Yeah, I saw Solbakken and the manager talk about Ødegaard joining the group in some capacity, potentially as a fourth coach, they kind of said, as if, you know, even if he wasn't there to actually play the matches, he might kind of have a cheerleading role or just be part of the group, which is, you know, I can understand. Obviously, Arsenal will want to have a say about whether the player needs to be doing his rehab in London. Mm. And I'm sure they won't get to trump any decision Arsenal make on that. But yeah, I mean, it can't be that bad if he was expecting the guy to join up in some capacity.
Yeah. Thomas Partey is another, made his comeback against Brentford. He's got two games away with Ghana. One of them is Brazil. I think, I can't remember who the other one is against. Could be Nicaragua.
I think it's Nicaragua in south of Spain or
yes,
something.
Yes, something like that. And this is one of those where you're like, okay, you know, these games could be quite useful for him because he has been out for, you know, whatever it was, a month or thereabouts, you know, getting that match fitness. But it does seem to be a case that he can sort of go for so long and then it goes again. It goes for so long, then it goes again. I mean, what's your sense on that situation? Like, it could be useful for him to come back and get those minutes under his belt, but it pushes him closer to the next one, maybe.
Yeah, it's a strange one, really, isn't it? Because quite a few of the injuries we've had have come via training sessions rather than matches.
Yeah.
In the last couple of months, and I mean, I'm not so worried about it. I mean, in an ideal world, yeah, maybe Thomas Partey would be wrapped up in cotton wool and at London Colney just getting ready for the Spurs game. I don't know if he's going to end up playing 180 minutes of these games. It's possible.
Mm.
I think it was very clear that we did miss him when he wasn't playing.
Mm-hmm.
It's no surprise that he wasn't in the midfield, or rather Sambi was in midfield rather than him at Old Trafford, and that didn't quite go to plan. So, yeah, I mean, it is a slight concern, especially with Elneny obviously sidelined for however many months. We still don't really know what the deal is there. I mean, the injury situation in general has been a bit concerning. You know, Zinchenko's picked up a couple, Smith Rowe, obviously. Who else did we have? Ødegaard's obviously had something. Nelson's had something. It's an underlying concern given the, you know, the pre-season that most of them have had.
Yeah, and like there are a little bit few worries about depth and what have you, though. Yeah. As I said on the Arscast Extra on Monday, like the depth was evident against Brentford in that without Ødegaard we had Vieira, without Zinchenko we had Tierney, but there comes a point where that does get a little bit stretched. An interesting one as well, I think, is Tomiyasu. Seen some quotes from him today where he says he's not satisfied, and you can understand why he's not satisfied because he's not playing very often. Ben White, I think, has been one of our outstanding players, doesn't really get an awful lot of mention, but I think he's been really, really good in the right back position. Which again is evidence of our depth, because without Tomiyasu we have Ben White, because it's not Cedric, and we have Saliba in a centre half. Tomiyasu says, when you look at the players selected as starters in the Premier League games, you will understand what is required to be there. I will work hard in order to get my position back. And it is an interesting one, because, you know, this is a guy who in the first half of last season was absolutely superb. Fell by the wayside, and I think we suffered a little bit because of his absence, particularly in the final part of the season, even though he did come back, but I don't think he was quite 100%. That's a really interesting one, isn't it? Because that sort of line between competition, a competitive environment, and a really tough decision for a manager to make is quite a thin one. You know, you wouldn't say anybody is deserving to lose their place, if that's the way you want to put it, but obviously, in November, he's going to have to mix things up a little bit and make sure that people don't get too fatigued.
Yeah, look, I think if Tomiyasu had been properly fit at the start of the season, he'd have been in with a real shout of starting all the games, you know, from the get-go. But obviously, that wasn't the case. So Ben White was put in there, and Ben White's done well. So you don't necessarily just take him out because, you know, Tomiyasu's back. I think there is absolutely no doubt in my mind that Tomiyasu will play a lot of football between now and the World Cup. Almost all the Europa League games, but also I think Ben White will need a rest. And if Ben White doesn't need a rest, then maybe Gabriel or William Saliba will, and then Ben White will be the first one to move across. So, I mean, I think it's, you want to hear your players aren't satisfied when they're not playing. But yeah, Tomiyasu's going to have a lot of football coming up, and given the way that his body's coped with things last season, you know, that in itself will be a test. And, you know, unlike Ben White, he's a cert to go to the World Cup. So he'll also have potentially at least three or four games, well, three games in the group stages, and then see how they do at a time when Ben White, it's looking increasingly likely, will be in London. Yeah, I mean, I'm not too concerned about Tomiyasu. I think looking across the squad, as far as I can tell, like only Cedric, Matt Turner haven't played any kind of Premier League minutes so far. Cedric's actually another one who's had an injury, hasn't he? He's been sidelined, and you know that must have come in training because he's not played any minutes. So, yeah, I mean, it's a weird one. I guess there was a very intense pre-season. I don't know if Arsenal are running or playing, you know, training sessions at a higher intensity than they have done in the past. These are all unknowns. As fans, you never know.
Well, we're playing at a higher intensity, so you would imagine that is reflected in training. Because you train like you play like you train, whatever way you want to look at it. There is obviously a measure of restraint in training, but if you want to be able to play with that intensity, you've got to put in the work as well. So maybe that's it.
I mean, there is something else which has sort of crossed my mind, which is when you've got greater squad depth, you can almost afford not to have players take a risk. So if they feel something, you're asking them to kind of, you know, announce that early doors, because we don't have to push them into action the way that we used to have to push them into action. We've got two or three other options. And actually, in the long term, that might help us over the course of the season, because we don't allow little things to become much bigger problems, which obviously has been an issue in the past. I don't know. I mean, it's, you know, it's one of these things where we're never going to get a true answer out of the club, I guess.
Yeah, that's a good point, though. You know, a couple of 2 or 3 week absences rather than something that's going to be out for a couple of months, like Kieran Tierney with the knee, for example. You know, when you feel something in your knee, say it. And don't risk something happening at a later date. Tomiyasu is going to face off against Matt Turner, actually, in a friendly, Japan versus the US on Friday, Friday 23rd, which is tomorrow at the time of recording. And they're playing Ecuador in another friendly. I find it mad that Ben White might not go to the World Cup in the England squad, I have to say. Based on current form this season and everything else I've seen, I think he'd be hard done by if he missed out.
Yeah, I mean, I guess he was a very, very late addition, wasn't he, to the Euro 2021, whatever tournament, whatever we call it these days. You know, he kind of, you know, ended up being the kind of guy that they turned to when there was a couple of injuries. And, you know, maybe there's an outside chance that happens again. But you can't help but slightly wonder if he's still picking Maguire, who quite clearly is out of form and not getting minutes. He suddenly turned to Eric Dier, who, you know, hasn't really been around the squad for a while. You know, people like Luke Shaw are getting call-ups and stuff. I mean, I think Arteta was 100% right the other day to point out, you know, Ben White's versatility is 100% a positive when you're taking a team to an international tournament, because you never know what can happen on the injury front. You need people who understand systems and whatnot. So, yeah, I don't know. It's a weird one. I just feel like it's hugely surprising to me that he's not played more, not just, you know, not been selected for this squad, but he's not really been in and around the squad for the last couple of camps. I know there were some injuries towards the end of last season, but, you know, maybe it's just one of those, you know, personality things. Maybe Gareth Southgate doesn't quite feel him in the way that he does some of the other guys.
Imagine not connecting with Gareth Southgate, Mr. Exciting himself. We'll see. We'll see what happens. Like from an Arsenal perspective, if he doesn't go, I'm okay with that, I guess. So you don't have a guy who's away, and but we're going to have plenty of players there anyway to see. Just moving on, there was some talk this week after the debut of Ethan Nwaneri. Some criticism in certain sections of the media. And our friend Dan from HLTCO did a very good little podcast on this. People can listen to it if you go to his Twitter at HLTCO or patreon.com, HLTCO. You'll find the free podcast there. Give it a listen. He's very good on this. But criticism of the decision to give this 15-year-old his debut, it was called self-indulgent by Mikel Arteta and irresponsible as well. And I don't know quite how anybody who has looked at, listened to, or heard Mikel Arteta speak in the 2.5 years that he's been Arsenal manager, he doesn't really do things that are self-indulgent. He doesn't really make decisions based on things that he feels aren't right for the football club or the players that, you know, he has at his disposal. Now, I do think there might be something, you know, in giving this young man his debut to sort of cement his connection to the club, because he's still on scholarship forms. You know, he can't sign professional. So there might be something in that, because he's so talented, they really want to fast track him and make him feel like part of the team. But that to me is just basically good management of your youth talent, rather than it being, you know, Mikel Arteta wanting to say, oh, look, I'm the manager who gave the youngest player ever his debut. That's not really how he operates.
No, I can see maybe one angle where you might criticize Arteta for the substitution. And that is, he doesn't really know how this kid is going to develop over the course of the next couple of years. I mean, he really is raw. 15 years old is raw. He's not played really at any higher than under 18 level, I think I'm right in saying. Maybe a couple of under 21 games. It was a massive departure for Arteta, because he had many chances over the course of the time that he's been at the club, now coming up to 3 years, to give kids debuts in closing stages of matches. I think more than anything, it says to me that Mikel Arteta is becoming more confident in himself and his position at Arsenal, and that he feels that he can make decisions like this where maybe before he was a little bit cautious. So obviously the circumstances of the game allowed for him to make a substitution like that.
Sure.
But as I said before, he's had opportunities to do that type of stuff before. And, you know, there was Matt Smith on the bench there, who at the age of 21, 22, who's been in and around the Arsenal side, has been itching for his own debut and hasn't had the chance, I don't think. I'm pretty sure, and certainly hasn't had a Premier League match.
No, I don't think so.
So, you know, there might be a couple of other kids who are older than and Wineri, who are maybe asking, well, how come I haven't had my chance? But I suspect maybe those chances will come this season in a way that, you know, we haven't had those opportunities, potentially because of the five subs now being reintroduced post, you know, having kind of gone away, having been introduced during COVID. But yeah, no, I feel like Arteta's more confident. I feel like something washed over him the night before the game. He kept talking about it being a gut feeling, like, I'm going to give this kid a go on the pitch. And that was sort of that was a very kind of Arteta-y thing. He's very scientific, very measured, very disciplined, very, you know, all these types of things. And this just seemed to be heart over head in many respects. I don't know what the kid's contract situation is, if he's wavering and this is going to tip him over the line. I do think the club now have a bit of a job on their hands, making sure that he's given the level of kind of care and attention he needs to deal with the added spotlight, because, you know, within about 20 minutes of the game finishing, there was 150 articles about who he is. You know, we've seen his head teacher interviewed on Sky Sports. That's a lot for a 15-year-old kid to cope with. And obviously all eyes are going to be on his development now, you know, where he goes next and whether Arsenal give him more opportunities. I think Arteta did kind of try and play things down a little bit in the post-game press conference, said maybe the next steps have to be backwards and sideways before going forwards again. I mean, seems pretty logical, because you're not going to see a 15-year-old playing regular football in the Premier League. But yeah, look, it was a talking point, I guess. I'm excited for the kid. And everything I hear is that he's a very, very, very good player, intelligent, down to earth. And, you know, it's great to hear and see kids like that getting opportunities at Arsenal.
Yeah, No, I mean, I just don't really see how it can be anything other than, I get what you're saying completely, actually, about the spotlight thing, because it is a lot. Yeah. You know, you go from obscurity to like a week-long talking point for various reasons. Many of them, the majority of them, thankfully, positive, who can see this for what it is. The others, you know, maybe not so much, and that is just perhaps part of the media cycle that those people are involved in. But, you know, I whatever about Arteta acting on his gut or his heart or whatever else, I don't think he would have done it without considering those things, without considering those other aspects as well, because you just can't, because you know that when you make your debut as a 15-year-old for a club like Arsenal and then become the youngest player ever to play ever anywhere ever, basically, you know, it is going to have some repercussions for, you know, for his life, I guess, and what it means for him. But, you know, I do think that, based on the conversations that he said he had with Per Mertesacker, you know, you have to imagine that these guys talk all the time, right? Like, not just about whether this player is talented, because they're all talented. To be in an academy like Arsenal, you have to be a talented player. But are you ready physically? Do you understand the game well enough? Are you tactically aware? Can you take instruction? What are you like as a person, as a personality? Like, I'm sure all of those things were taken into account before he made that decision, even if it was just to give him 3 or 4 minutes.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, as you say, I mean, I think things are looking pretty joined up. We know the relationship between Mertesacker and Arteta is incredibly close. You know, they were good pals when they were playing together at the club, and, you know, probably the two most mature heads in any room. It feels like at Arsenal over the course of the last sort of decade or so. So I really just hope that people don't use it against the player, because, you know, he just needs to kind of settle down now, get into a rhythm, get more games under his belt, more experience, probably at some point go out on loan. And then, you know, we may see him again in a couple of years' time. I know, obviously, we've had other kids come through very early, you know, Fabregas and Wilshere. Saka made his debut at 17, 18, didn't he? I mean, it's... we're talking 6-7 months difference, really, in terms of age between those guys. I mean, they've proved they can do it. If you're good enough, you'll be fine. Well, let's see how it goes. I hope he doesn't get marked out in kind of, you know, under 21 football now as a kind of the guy to go for, because he's the guy who was 15 years old and made his Premier League debut. And maybe that won't happen. Maybe his teammates will have his back anyway. But
sure.
It's super exciting for the kid. And he really is a kid.
And exciting for the academy and for the... for the way it demonstrates as a pathway from the academy to first team, you know, which has been shown by the fact that we've got Eddie Nketiah, Bukayo Saka, Emile Smith Rowe all in the team as well. So it's a good tradition, a good Arsenal tradition. And hopefully we see a lot more of this guy in the years to come, if not in the very near future. All right, we'll leave it there. Andrew, as always, thanks very much.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Thank you very much indeed to Andrew. You can find him on Twitter. He is at @AAllensport, at @AAllensport.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com. Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Now, you will remember last week we did a competition to give away some copies of David Dean's book entitled Calling the Shots. I asked a question about what party game Arsene Wenger and David Dean played when they had that famous meeting for the first time. And I gave you, I think, a couple of, I think there was musical chairs, Twister and charades. And charades, of course, was the answer. A surprising amount of people went with Twister, though. Which, you know, certainly conjured up some images in my mind. And now, they're in your mind, too. The random number generator picked three people at random who chose charades and not Twister. And those three people are Chris Kent, Ken Hickey, and Richard Tenby. Well done to you guys. I will be in touch by email. We'll get your details and we will get the book sent out to you ASAP. Right, let's crack on with the show. And with me now to talk William Saliba, Flo Balogun, and much more, it's Matt Spiro. Hi, Matt.
Hello, Andrew.
How are you?
I'm very, very well, thank you. Enjoying a very good season so far. It's been a lot of fun.
It sure has. Now, last time we spoke was, I think, probably about the halfway point of last season. And we were doing a kind of a midterm report on William Saliba. And it was going well for him at Marseille. And I think it continued to go well for him at Marseille. But there were, you know, throughout last season, some concerns, some worries. Was he going to come back? Would he be welcomed back into the fold? Would Marseille try and take him, on a permanent basis? Would Arsenal be open to that? And saying that right now, it seems absolutely fucking ludicrous that such a thing might happen. Are you in any way surprised by how well he has started this season at Arsenal?
No, from a playing point of view, I'm not surprised, because I know what he's capable of, and I've seen him for a full season at Marseille, for half a season at Nice. And I'm not surprised about that. I think perhaps when we were talking 6 months ago, I wasn't 100% sure that we'd be talking about William Saliba, an Arsenal player, at this point in time, because there were doubts, and I certainly had doubts that Mikel Arteta would show faith in William Saliba, because there were issues, there were problems between the two parties. And I think it's dangerous to send a player of that ability back to his homeland. I think it's one thing to send him to Saint-Étienne or to Nice, but send him to Marseille, who are, with all due respect to PSG, Marseille, the biggest club in France. They got a massive following, and he was hugely popular there. Marseille wanted to get a buy option into his contract at the beginning. Arsenal resisted that, thankfully. And he would have had that season with the Marseille fans, with Marseille players, Matteo Guendouzi in the dressing room saying, "Come on, William, stay on. We've got something good going on here." And at the same time, when I did that interview with Saliba towards the beginning of last season, he said to me that he absolutely feels like an Arsenal player. So I knew he wanted his future to be with Arsenal, but I had doubts as to whether that would happen with Arteta. But in terms of his performances, no, I'm absolutely not surprised. I'm pleased, obviously. You never know how it's going to go. But from the Crystal Palace game onwards, he's been outstanding.
Sure. There's some interesting quotes just dropped this morning via Canal Plus. And he talks about his start to the season. "I came back here to win, so it's nice to start." And then he said, from a personal point of view, "It was better for me to go on loan to play, make mistakes, learn. I came back stronger and with new ambitions. These experiences proved to me football is complicated, but you should never give up and believe in yourself." And I think you probably could make a good case that, let's say, there was probably a time last season when Arsenal could have done with William Saliba, particularly towards the end of the campaign when, injuries and fatigue and all those things kind of kicked in, and we saw, what happened with Rob Holding in the derby and everything else. But from a broader perspective, that full season on loan, as you say, in a big club where there is a lot of pressure, there's an expectation to perform, and when you get to a certain point in the table, they got Champions League football, all of that kind of stuff. In a 38 game season for Arsenal, which unfortunately was only just over 38 games because the cup games didn't go particularly well either. The decision to send him on loan has probably been justified by the absolute readiness of this guy now, pushing for a place in the France squad. He has all that experience, and I think Arsenal are benefiting from that.
I think you're right. I think it's worked out really well. I don't think it was part of a carefully thought out master plan. But again, I don't think we need to go over what's happened in the past. We don't know exactly Well, I don't exactly what, you know, what happened between Saliba and Arsenal, but he was, you know, he felt, I can say that with certainty, he felt as though he was unwanted by Mikel. I don't think it was a case, go to Marseille, come on, William, we're going to be watching you every week. I don't think he was told that. There was uncertainty in his head. But from a footballing point of view, that season that he had in Marseille was absolutely brilliant. Mm. I think, you know, I think he's developed as a man to go there, carry the Marseille defence. They played a sort of gung-ho football with Jorge Sampaoli, where the defence played very high up. They were able to do that because of Saliba's speed. They could only do that with Saliba in the team. And luckily for them, he was basically fit all season. So, yeah, we talk about mistakes. He says, I made mistakes. He did make some, and no real outrageous howlers. And he'll make some this season, I think. Mm. But no, it's worked out well, Andrew. And I was talking to somebody the other day and saying, you know, if Saliba had been thrown in the deep end last season at Arsenal, and we lost our first three matches, you can imagine people going, well, hang on, what? You know, this guy's a kid. He's not ready. And, you know, it could have been counterproductive. So in that respect, yeah, he's come in 21 now, looking like he's absolutely ready.
You know, and, like, just in terms of what he brings to this Arsenal team, when we think about, you know, a lot of the focus has been on the difference in attack with Gabriel Jesus coming in and what he's done at centre forward and how he has transformed that position, and you know, the way that Arsenal appear to be a much more progressive team now. But I don't think we can overlook the fact that a lot of that is due to a big investment in the defence, with Tomiyasu coming in, Ben White coming in, Aaron Ramsdale coming in, Gabriel's a relatively recent signing. This is a very a completely reworked defence from where it was, you know, two seasons ago, three seasons ago, when we were having nightmares and hysterics over the likes of Mustafi and Socrates and Luiz to an extent as well. This is completely different. But when we look at William Saliba to come in, the physical presence, the pace, the way he reads the game, I think the assurance, the coolness that he feels when he's got the ball in difficult positions at the back. It's very difficult to remember a young defender who plays with such confidence on the ball. And I think you're right. Like any young defender, he is going to make mistakes, and there might be one or two moments where he gets caught out. But, you know, to be a progressive team, you have to be progressive at the back as well. And he brings a lot of that. The third goal that Arsenal scored against, who the hell did we play? Brentford, exactly. Brentford, yeah. Thank you very much. we scored. But that little 1-2 in midfield to set the move away, having almost been caught on the ball. I mean, it's not like anything I can remember before.
No. Franz Beckenbauer. No, well, I'm getting a bit carried away. No, but you asked me at the beginning if I'm surprised at all. I mean, that maybe is one aspect that he's surprised me a little bit. Just, you know, you talked about having the attributes that he's got, you know, being strong, being quick, reading the game well. You know, he's got all the defensive attributes, but what really is standing out at the moment is that it's the way he's carrying himself on the pitch. The composure on the ball, the aura he's giving off, which is incredible for a young man. And I think it's so important for a centre-back, because it sort of breeds confidence around him as well. And yes, we saw it at Marseille. I mean, he would always be comfortable on the ball, and he'd try to do something with it rather than just, you know, shoving it out to the fullback. And he does try and move the ball forward if he can. I maybe wasn't expecting him to be that good that quickly in the Premier League. You know, I thought maybe a few safety first balls, a few lumping it upfield. The first 15 minutes, I thought, against Brentford, I mean, I was with my French eye, if you like, watching him maybe more than Arsenal's other players. And I just thought it was so impressive. I mean, it was a great all-round performance from Arsenal against Brentford. But I thought in those first 15 minutes, the way Brentford, you know, tried to attack us, playing the balls into the channels as we knew that they would, trying to catch us on the transitions. And not only was he quick, but like you say, when he got the ball, he'd keep it. You know, he'd play a little simple pass into Xhaka or Partey, and there wasn't any sort of giving it back to Brentford. And I just think he took the sting out of them, got the first goal again on 18 minutes. And I just, you know, he didn't win the game on his own, but those 18 minutes was a massive factor, I thought, to kind of just quietening the crowd, getting the goal, and, you know, amazing stuff.
Sure. And we've added goal scoring to his repertoire as well. He had one goal before he came to Arsenal, and he's now got, you know, 200% more goals than he ever had in his career before. So, I mean, that's a nice little thing. But, you know, I think it plays in when you're a guy who's 6'4", when you've got a team that's good from set pieces, you can surely contribute.
Yeah, he's got that. I think he's got that in him. I can remember quite a few near misses. He got an equaliser, or it would have been a winner, I think, for Marseille at the Parc des Princes last season that was cancelled for offside by VAR. Mm. I can remember a few sort of balls off the line and stuff. So only one or two goals last season, could have been five or six. And yeah, he's got to bring that into his game. Yeah, you talk about surprising me. The left-footed shot, I didn't see that coming.
No. I don't think anyone did.
He didn't do that at Marseille, I'll tell you.
Well, Zinchenko definitely didn't see that coming. So the way he reacted to that. Can I ask you a little bit about, like, when we think about a player, we think about just this guy in isolation. But generally speaking, players these days have got people around them, management teams, agents, those kinds of things. And I suppose one slight worry from an Arsenal perspective is we know he's into the final 2 years of his contract, that there is a decision to be made at some point. And, you know, he's spoken about being open to a new contract, I think. He talked about liking London. He likes the team. He likes the fans. And I think the fact that he's been an ever-present in a Premier League team so far this season with the World Cup on the horizon, you know, those kinds of things will play into his ambitions. The fact that he's become such a favourite with the fans, with the song, and the song is being sung in the dressing room as well. I guess it's probably gone better than anybody, any of us, or maybe even he would have expected. But what is like the behind the scenes on him, and what roadmap is there for his career, if you like? Because Arsenal would obviously, I think at this point, want him to extend his contract because, you know, they would be mad not to. But how open do you think the player will be to that? And if he had some doubts, let's say, this time last year after he'd been sent out on loan, how much do you think the fact that he is being picked every single week will play into what decision is down the line?
Yeah, I think it's massively important. I think when the season started, was it because of a Tomiyasu injury that Saliba effectively started against Palace with Ben White? And, you know, from the beginning, he basically made himself undroppable, really. Mm. And I think that, yeah, that was really important. My dad, who's a big Arsenal fan and a real warrior, kept messaging me saying, but he's going to leave in August. I was like, well, he's not going to leave now, is he? You know, he's playing and the fans are behind him. And, you know, it would have been a hammer blow, but I think he does feel central now to Arsenal's plans. And you know, the World Cup is incredibly important in his mind. So I think if he'd have started the season on the bench, I couldn't imagine him rushing into signing a new contract. But in terms of his career plan, you know, I think he sees himself at Arsenal for a good period. Hopefully, from an Arsenal point of view, a very good period. And I'd be amazed if talks aren't going on at the moment, because I don't think Arsenal will be in a stronger position to tie a player like this down to a new contract. They're top of the league. They've got some fantastic young players. The future seems to be really exciting. So I'd be disappointed from an Arsenal point of view if they're not trying to tie him down. And hopefully there'll be news in the coming weeks. I don't see any reason why Saliba would work against that, even though, yes, a player sort of, you know, has it in his own interest, if you like, to go to the final year of his contract. But, you know, you'd like to think that a deal can be struck.
Okay, fingers crossed on that one. Let's move on and talk about another player who's been sent out on loan to France. Quite interesting comments from Flo Balogun this week as well. He's on loan at Reims. And he said, before I moved, Mikel just wanted me to develop as a man. It was kind of like an open answer. It was for me to interpret what he meant by develop as a man. And he says, by moving abroad, I'm starting to learn what he meant by that. It doesn't just mean on the pitch, but also off the pitch. And he's had a really bright start to his season in Ligue 1.
Yeah, no, moving to France turns you into a real man.
Andrew. You know, I mean, Matt, you know that, yeah, for sure.
Exactly. So, no, it is interesting. I think it's really positive to give yourself that chance in a foreign league. And he certainly seems really invested and really sort of open. I've seen lots of clips of him with his teammates. I know in that interview he's saying, bloody hell, it's difficult. They're all speaking French. which is what happens quite a lot here. But he's got an English-speaking coach, Oscar Garcia, who's a former Barcelona player and has had a long and varied sort of coaching career and is good with young players. So, you know, I think that probably would have gone into Arsenal's sort of thinking as well. Reims are, I think, the youngest squad in Europe's top five leagues. So they're a really young team. They're down in 17th. Balogun started brilliantly on the pitch. I think five goals in his first six or seven. Mm. He's got five goals in eight now. But that's pretty impressive. I wasn't sure that he would start for them, but he's made himself a definite starter now. And he's given a couple of interviews to the French media as well, speaking in English. But, you know, it shows a sort of openness that he's looking to sort of, you know, enjoy a nice season, get to know French football a little bit. Mm. It's a little club in the middle of the Champagne region, beautiful place. It's only about an hour and a half from Paris. So, you know, a nice place to spend a year. And if he's playing regularly in that very young Reims team, so I think it'll be nice for him because there's plenty of sort of 20-year-old, 19-year-olds. So he should be able to make good friends. And yeah, really, really positive so far.
What about the issue of the language? He does talk about in the interview. He said, it's important to throw yourself in at the deep end, as I'm trying to do. Hopefully I don't drown. He says there's only three English-speaking people at the club. And then he said he's got French lessons once a week for an hour, which doesn't sound like a lot, to be honest. But at the same time, if you're training every day with people who are speaking the language every day, that's how you, a lot of how you learn. You pick it up on the playground, so to speak. But how important is it a thing? Because, you know, I've visited France once or twice and I've found like they do appreciate or they do want you to speak the language. Yeah. They don't just want you to say it in English louder. Is that a decent way of putting it?
No. I think you've hit on it there to be making the effort. Like he's not going to end the season fluent in French if he's only doing an hour's lesson. I mean, unless he's sort of going to the cafe with L'Equipe and, you know, having a good, you know, dictionary and having a good read through of that. I think, yeah, it's important to make the effort. I also think the young French people more and more and more want to practice English. So he'll probably find a lot of the youngsters, you know, he can communicate.
Sure.
Obviously, you know, you need to understand French for those sort of moments in the game where you have to make a call. But, you know, there's also the football vocabulary that I'm sure he'll learn that. That's the first thing they learn. It's not like us. We ask how to get to the station. They learn how to say man on and I'm free and stuff like that. So. Sure. He'll be all right.
All right, cool. Nuno Tavares is on loan at Marseille. That pathway seems fairly well trodden at this moment in time. Had a great start, and I think we got one of those sort of archetypal first few weeks of the loan move kind of interviews from him. I remember it happened with Danny Ceballos when he came over and had that really good performance against Burnley in the sunshine very early on in that first season that he came. And there were all these interviews about like, well, he'd be open to staying forever and all that kind of stuff. So that initial glow, that kind of honeymoon period, how is it going for him there?
Yeah, really, really well. Really well. I mean, he surprised me, you know, when you think about how it kind of finished for him last season at Arsenal. You know, his confidence was rock bottom, and he has hit the ground running. I mean, one main difference is that he's playing as a left wing back and not as a left back. And having watched him in the last few weeks, and in fact, having watched him play left back for Arsenal, I'm convinced he's not a left back, and he's a left wing back, or possibly even a forward. You know, possibly even a left winger or forward, because he, you know, he's been doing a lot of damage, you know, with his running, and he's extremely quick. You've seen him as a player, but when he's played for Arsenal, he's had to worry a lot about the defensive side, and at Marseille, he's been given pretty much free rein to attack. And I think I tweeted something about this the other day when Marseille were struggling against Lille. They were 1-0 down, and it was the first game that they'd rested Nuno because they've been playing Champions League as well. Mm. And the coach put him on after 22 minutes. And the impact he had, he just got the stadium going, you know, a couple of rampaging runs up the left. He's finding an end product as well, which he didn't have at Arsenal. He's managing some of the time when he gets up the wing to pick out teammates with his crosses. The other thing, you know, we saw him quite a lot, especially in his first few weeks at Arsenal, trying his luck from long range. Yeah. And quite often those right-footed shots would kind of like skew off high in the stand. They're going in. He's had two or three long shots with his right foot into the bottom corner. People have been asking him if he's right-footed. So, look, I'm surprised, but let's hope it continues. I mean, you know, the other side of the coin would be that in the two Champions League games, he's he's not been as effective. The level's been a little bit higher, albeit one of the games was against Tottenham. But Marseille should have dominated, controlled it for 60 minutes. Maybe not dominated, but Tottenham, as they tend to, sort of hit on a couple of counter attacks. But no, really, really, really positive. I mean, at the start of the season, I didn't think Nuno Tavares had a future at Arsenal. I'm still not 100% sure he does, because I'm not sure, even though he's a player that's come in under Arteta, I'm not, you know, he's still a bit raw. You know, some of the times when he goes on these runs, he, you know, say looks like a giraffe would be a bit harsh, but, you know, with those long legs, and you're kind of wondering if he quite knows what he's doing, you know. But he's been quite effective a lot of the time. So I do think, having watched him the last few months, that he has talent and he has, the ability perhaps to be an Arsenal player one day. But I'm still not 100% sure that will happen.
Yeah, I'm not sure he's a left-back. I think we kind of gathered that last season that, well, certainly he's a left-back with a lot to learn defensively. But when you can get him going forward, when you can get him running at the opposition, then there's certainly some talent there and some potential there. And the ingredients or the bits and pieces have come together with the goals he scored early on for Marseille. So good luck to him. Fingers crossed it continues to go well. Just finally, some thoughts from you as an Arsenal fan on the start to this season. We're sitting top of the table in the middle of this international break, of course, North London Derby on the horizon. But, you know, chalk and cheese when you compare it to this time last season. And certainly not just in terms of points, not just in terms of where we are in the table, but the sort of mood, the belief, the what we consider that this team is has got in its locker, I think, compared to 12 months ago is really quite different.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. It's really, really exciting. I'm, you know, like a lot of Arsenal fans probably like have, you know, trying to stop myself from getting too excited or, you know, because I kind of went on strike after the Newcastle game. I found it so, because I did buy into a lot of the feel good factor after, you know, last season where things were getting better and better. And I went to the first game in ages, the Wolves game at the Emirates. I hadn't been, I don't think, since COVID. And when Lacazette didn't quite score, but got the own goal at the end, it was just complete mayhem in the Emirates. And it had quite a profound impact on me. And I just felt as well, you could, such a difference in the stadium, like the positivity and everybody behind the team. And it was obviously seeing a last minute winner was pretty special. But that's continuing. They've made some terrific signings. Very excited about Gabriel Jesus, obviously. And keeping my fingers crossed that we get through October, if not top of the league, then still sort of, with confidence high and having taken some points at least from Tottenham, Liverpool, Chelsea. And we'll see. But pleased as well that William Saliba is there, because had he not returned to Arsenal, it would have been the first time, I think, that we didn't have a French player since 1996. I was thinking about this the other day.
Wow.
Which would have been, maybe time for me to come home if that had happened.
For sure. That would have been, Remy Gard and Patrick Vieira?
Remy Gard and Vieira, yeah.
Wow.
I mean, we've had lots of French players most of the time, but it's been dwindling a bit under Arteta. And I think Saliba's the last man standing.
Yeah, we're moving more to the sort of Portuguese in the dressing room. That's the language of the dressing room now. Portuguese and English, I think, more than French. So anyway, listen, it's all going well. As ever, Matt, thanks a million. Great to talk to you, and we'll catch up again soon, I hope.
Cheers, Andrew. Thanks.
Thank you very much indeed to Matt. You'll find him on Twitter. He is at Matt Spiro, And no doubt we'll check in with him again at a later point in the season to find out how Balogun and Tavares are doing as they continue their loans in France. Right, let's leave it there for this week's show. James and I will have an Arscast Extra for you. I think it's going to be on Sunday. Although I have to check with James. I should have checked with James before I started recording this bit of the show. But we will have it for you either on Sunday or Monday. I'm not quite sure. Maybe it might be Monday evening. Is it possible that we've made an arrangement and I have forgotten? Yes. Is it possible that we haven't made any arrangement at all and I've forgotten that we haven't made it? Also, yes. Anyway, we will have one at some point. So keep an eye on Twitter and on the website and everything else. I'll give you the heads up as to when we're going to record that. For now, though, have a great weekend, whatever you're getting up to. It's non-Arsenal, so, you know, you're free to do all kinds of things that you might not normally do, such as, I don't have a clue, and beats me. But whatever you do, have a great one with family, friends, and good people. I'll talk to you on the Arsecast Extra with James whenever that's happening. For now, take it easy, and we will catch you on the next one. Until then, cheers. Bye-bye. Welcome back to Talk Shite Radio, talking shite about sport 24 hours a day. We are talking Premier League this morning, and with me to do that, everyone's favourite ex-pro, Danny Cunty.
Hello.
Danny, let's start at the top of the table. Arsenal, 6 wins from 7, playing some exquisite football this season. Had a little blip at Manchester United, but bounced back against Brentford. Comprehensive win there. The Gunners are looking good so far.
Yeah, you could say that, I suppose. But if you're like me, one of the great minds of football, you could focus on the real issue.
And what exactly is that real issue, Danny?
The fact that Mikel Arteta should be put in prison.
Prison?
Damn right. I'd have him doing a 10 stretch in the scrubs for what he did at Brentford.
And just remind me what exactly it was that Mikel Arteta did that requires him to spend a decade of his life behind bars.
Well, he's given a debut to a 15-year-old.
And that is problematic. Why?
Well, first, it's disrespectful to the opposition. You're basically telling them, look, I can beat you with a player in my team who isn't old enough to go to a pub after the game, get shit-faced, and then drive home. And I don't know about you, but I am extremely invested in child labour laws. What does this mean for the rest of the country when they see a 15-year-old? Are we going to have urchins back up the chimneys again?
What about the counter-argument, Danny, that it says more about the talent and potential of 15-year-old Ethan Nwaneri than it being some kind of made-up crime?
Yeah, but I don't accept that. Oh, I'm just concerned about this young man, this boy, this lad that I hadn't heard of until 2 days ago. Who's looking out for the best interests of Eden and Eve, what's his name again?
Yeah, I think we might leave this one here, Danny. As ever, thank you so much for bringing all your wit and wisdom to the airwaves. This is Talk Shite Radio, and when we return after the commercial break, Graham Souness is here to tell us why, instead of penalty shootouts, we should go back to when men were really men and decide games by two players fighting to the death.
Mikel Arteta is a terrorist.
Oh, shut up, Danny.
Talk Shite Radio, talking shite about sport 24 hours a day. 24 hours a day.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.